I spent a fair amount of time this week, well, last week and early this week, thinking about all the things that I could share with you this week. Now, I know last week was a bit overwhelming because we talked about the Omer and, you know, it's like counting and unfamiliar and sort of weird practice and all that. And those kind of messages, they tend to get sort of mixed reviews. First of all, they're teaching reviews, so we don't have teaching messages, so we don't have like these deep life application moments. There's not a lot of yelling and excitement. It's hard to get excited about waving the barley, right? But mostly it's just because that stuff is very unfamiliar to people. It doesn't matter. I mean, we talked about it, whether you're messianic or especially for church people. But listen, it's Sfirat HaOmer. It's the counting of the Omer. It's a biblical commandment. We talk about it. We do it. We cover it. But it's not something I know that you'd really want to like spend a lot of time talking about or talk about for, you know, a series or multiple weeks. Even though the Omer count is a series, it lasts how many weeks? 7. So with that in mind, knowing where we were, what we did, I as I thought about what to present, and keeping in mind, of course, that I always want to meet you where you are. I want to deliver, you know, what you want, what you need to learn. I decided to go sort of a different way and do something that I really love, and that's to talk about controversial things and about history. I love history. I think you love history too. That's a great part of the way that we learn in this community is through the historical context of the Bible, especially the gospel. So I thought, okay, what has history and controversy related to the Bible and can help us ultimately understand more about ourselves? Because that would be a great message, right? And it was obvious, because when I think of all those components, my mind goes to exactly one place. Do you know where it goes? You're going to love it. Because no matter what you feel, you couldn't have possibly gotten enough. My mind goes directly to the Omer. Yes, we're going Omer the top today. I am absolutely, you can't overlook the significance of this. And I don't want to Omer emphasize it, but it's important. Okay? That through the history and the controversy, there's a great lesson we can learn. So welcome back to another week of exciting teaching brought to you by God Himself on the Omer. And I'm going to take it all the way to Shavuot because it's awesome what we're going to learn. Now, first of all, you have to even ask this question. Did you know there was a controversy, is a controversy about how the Omer was counted going way back to Yeshua's time and before? You know this? Some people do. And the controversy is about when to start counting it. Now, if you already know this, you might be saying, oh gosh, not again. If you don't know this, you might be saying, who cares? But I've got good in all of it for both of you. So yeah, I want to teach you about life through this strange idea that's the Omer. We'll uncover the history, the why, but we'll also, as we enter into Shavuot, we'll gain some fantastic insight about the Bible, history, controversial questions, and guess what we'll do? We will grow. Pun intended. Hag HaKatzir, the festival of the harvest. Right? I'm full of them, man. I am really full of them. But full of them. Let me teach you a word, machloket. Anyone know that word? Machloket. It is a fancy, beautiful way of saying in Hebrew, an argument. It's an argument, usually about some type of halakhic interpretation, okay? So, And we have to get down to the nitty-gritty with this because it's down deep in there, but there was an issue, a machloket, a disagreement, a dispute, an argument about this issue of law, and there still is today an argument about counting the Omer. It's mostly among Hebrew roots people and Karaite Judaism. But here's the text that I want to look at. Leviticus 23. Speak to the Israelite people and say to them, when you enter the land that I'm giving to you and reap its harvest, you shall bring the first sheaf of your harvest to the priest. He shall elevate the sheaf before Hashem for acceptance in your behalf. The priest shall elevate it, carefully listening, on the day after the Sabbath. Okay? You with me? On the day after the Sabbath. When is that? When is the day after the Sabbath? Mimocharat HaShabbat, it says in Hebrew. The day after the Sabbath. When is that? In a plain reading, what day falls after the Sabbath? Sunday, Yom Rishon. The first day of the week, Sunday. Well, Leviticus continues, you shall also count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day when you brought in the sheaf of the wave offering, there shall be seven complete Sabbaths. You shall count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath, then you shall present a new grain offering to the Lord. Now, we're reading that from a Christian translation. A Jewish one will translate some words differently. We'll get to that in a minute. But the text is the day after the Shabbat, Mimocharat HaShabbat, okay? Then it says seven complete Sabbaths. You shall count 50 days after the seventh Sabbath. That's the Omer count, 49 days. You start counting, apparently from Sunday. And then we'll count seven more Sabbaths to the day after the seventh Sabbath, which is Shavuot. And if we start on Sunday and we count seven Sabbaths, we'll end on Sunday, and Shavuot would always be on Sunday. Okay? That's the plain sense of it. We start on Sunday, we end on Sunday. So here's an easy question for you. Given that by the plain reading, that puts Shavuot on Sunday, we're hosting a Shavuot conference next week. When does it start?
Thursday.
Night. What day is Shavuot day one, according to that? Friday. Deep insight. Put your antenna up. Friday is not Sunday. Do you know when we started counting the Omer? Thursday, April 6th. Ready for a secret? Thursday is also not Sunday. Okay? Now, the question then becomes, if that's the plain reading and we're doing this, have we gotten this way wrong? Okay? Have we gotten this way wrong? What was the word I taught you? Machloket. This is the argument. This is the argument. The ancient controversy. Yes, most people, many people from these ancient controversial participants would say, yeah, you got it wrong. You know who would agree with us? The Pharisees. And everyone wants to be aligned with the Pharisees, right? They have such a positive reputation everywhere. Everyone loves the Pharisees. I'm going to get a shirt like Paul that says, I am a Pharisee. You know he said that, right? Am, present tense in Acts. Anyway, the Pharisees would agree with us. They said that the day after the Sabbath meant the 16th of Nisan. Okay, the 16th of Nisan, not Sunday, but always the 16th of Nisan, the day after the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So this could get very complicated. I'm going to do my very best to communicate it to you. The 14th of Nisan is Pesach. That's when we slaughter the lambs. The 15th of Nisan is the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It is also a day of rest. It's a Shabbat, right? And the 16th of Nisan is the day that falls after the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. That's the day the Pharisees said, we start counting the Omer. It doesn't matter what day of the week it is. It's by the calendar. You see the difference? It's very easy to track the difference. It doesn't matter. It's not designated by the weekly Shabbat. The calendar does that for it. And so we did that this year. We do it every year. We start counting the Omer on the 16th of Nisan, and 50 days later will be the 6th of Sivan, which this week, this year is Thursday, and that's when we're going to celebrate Shavuot. Okay? That's has transferred all the way down to most, almost all Jewish practice today is modeled after the Pharisees. But here's the problem. The Pharisees weren't the only voice in Second Temple Judaism. Who else was there? How many other parties and contributors did we have to Judaism in the Second Temple period? A lot. Let's just say that. Essenes, Sadducees, Bothusians, Herodians. We had like all kinds of people, and they all had their own opinions, really, about a lot of different things, which resulted in a lot of arguments. And this is one of them. But I'll tell you what they thought about the Omer, which I already did. The Sadducees, the Tzedukim, Qumran, the Bothusians are another. You'll read in the Talmud, the Sadducees and Bothusians kind of get intermingled. They had a similar way of looking at the world, which was very simple. If it's not in the Bible, it's not real. Okay? So we know the Sadducees denied what? They denied the afterlife. They denied the existence of angels. They denied the resurrection, right? And they denied all connection to the oral law, which the Pharisees were very clear about teaching. The oral law. So the Pharisees, Sadducees, they did not see eye to eye. We'll call the Sadducees the first sola scriptura people. Martin Luther would really love them. Actually, he wouldn't because they're Jewish. But sola scriptura. Okay? So a Pharisaic interpretation that read the Torah beyond the plain sense, which we just talked about the plain sense, and then we talked about the way that the Sadducees read it. The argument from them, Bothusian, Sadducee, you're not reading this what it says. You're making something up. They read, let's just say the Sadducees, they read, Mimochorot HaShabbat Hayom, the day after the Sabbath. It meant one day and one day only. What day? Sunday. 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 We start counting on Sunday. The Omer counts on Sunday, goes for seven Shabbats. We count seven Shabbats. Seven Sabbaths later on a Sunday was Shavuot. And this confirms, that was the machloket. That is the machloket. That's the argument, which confirms Josephus' comments about the incredible division occurring in the period between Jews. Later, it was the Karaites. That's a later developed group, possibly still tied to the Sadducees, who believed and taught and defended something very similar. Today, I told you the controversy is modern. Today, it's still going on among many, many, many Hebrew roots teachers who deny the validity of anything oral or traditional Pharisaic. Well, they still do a lot of those things. They just deny that it's complicated. Okay, so we still have this controversy. You will find it. If you search it on the internet, you'll find all kinds of Hebrew roots teaching promoting Sunday. Sunday, Shavuot must be Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. Well, who is right? Who cares, you might say. I mean, the Essenes are gone, the Qumran is an ancient site. The Sadducees are gone. The Bothusians are gone. Who cares? The Pharisees won. We do that. But that's no fun. I mean, don't you want to argue and talk about the history and look at it? I do. I like to do that. So, but the real point is, what if we are doing it wrong? What if we're celebrating God's calendar according to the traditions of men? That would be terrible, wouldn't it? If we're being legalistic and following the Pharisees? So here's the buckle up part of this message. There's no easy answer. But the Pharisees' interpretation, as I told you, that we count on the 16th of Nisan, the day after the first day of the festival, has held for almost all Jews and determines, even in our age, how we celebrate our Shavuot conference at Shalom Mekin. And we can look at the Torah for the answer with some linguistic evidence. It all has to do with the very important word, Shabbat. We know what Shabbat means, right? What day is today? Shabbat. We know that the Shabbat means, literally it means to cease. But it is the seventh day. It is the day Shabbat Breshit, the Shabbat of creation. The seventh day, the day of rest, we cease from all labors. That's what it means, right? Yes, until it doesn't mean that. Because it doesn't always mean that. When we look at Leviticus 23 in its full context, we're going to determine something important. There we have a list of the holidays. And an interesting term applies to many of those major holidays. Leviticus 23:20, verse 23 and 24. Again, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the sons of Israel saying, in the seventh month, on the first of the month, you shall have a rest. What day is that? Seventh month, first day, it's Rosh Hashanah. What shall you have? A Shabbat, a Shabbaton, it says. You shall have a rest. Shabbaton, connected to the root Shabbat. It's a Shabbat, it's a rest. Okay? It goes on to then say in verse 39, on exactly the 15th day of the seventh month, what is that? Sukkot. You shall have gathered in the crops of the land, you'll celebrate the feast for 7 days with a rest on the first day and a rest on the eighth day. Complete rest. Shabbaton on Sukkot, first day, eighth day, Shmini Atzeret. These are the seventh day festivals. They're described as what? Shabbaton. Okay? Now, interestingly, you'll also find Yom Kippur in there, and you'll also find Shabbat in Leviticus 23. Do you know how those are termed in Hebrew? Shabbat, Shabbaton. It's both. Yom Kippur and the Shabbat in Leviticus 23 are called Shabbat Shabbaton. The festivals are just Shabbaton. Okay? Just stick with me on that. Those festival days, though they are called Shabbaton, are not the same as the Shabbat, are they? What's the big difference? On Shabbat and Yom Kippur, you can do nothing. You can do no work, a complete rest, Shabbat Shabbaton. On the festivals, we can do what? What's one primary difference? We can cook. We can prepare things for the festival. It's a little bit different. And yet, Leviticus 23 refers to this as Shabbat. It has the same, this root, but they're not Shabbat. Now also notice that the day after the Sabbath then does not necessarily have to mean the Sabbath. Because other things are called Sabbaths. Now, that term, though, the Sabbath, let's talk about that for a minute, because that is the, like the Sabbath, ha-shabbat, the use of the definite article, ha. It's a, ha-ha, I know. It's there, ha-shabbat, it determines this. The text does not tell us that we're to wave the omer on Mimocharat Shabbat, the day after Shabbat. The text says you are to wave the Omer after the Shabbat. Okay? Big question. Which one? Which one is the Shabbat? There's a question, it's sort of complicated, but I'm going to read it to you from the Talmud. Rabbi Yossi says that the verse, and you shall count for you, this is from Menachot 66a, by the way, if you want to look it up. You shall count for you from the morrow after the day of rest, okay? He says, that means from the morrow after the festival of Passover. So he's asserting the Pharisaic position. He's saying, that's what that means. Do you say it means from the morrow after the festival of Passover? Or is it only referring to the day after the Shabbat of creation? You with me on the question? Okay, is it after Passover or is it after Shabbat? Well, you can say in response, he's telling his students, does it say from the day of rest that is during Passover? And they say, no, it only says the day of rest. And then he says to them, fine, tell me which one of the Shabbatot, the over 50 that we have in the year, which one does it mean? It's a very good question because it's very enigmatic, and yet it's still pointing to the fact that it is referring to a particular Shabbat, okay? Resting, but when you see something like that, HaShabbat, the definite article being used, oftentimes it is used to define something that has to reference something that has just been previously defined. When it is so the obvious referent to something that just came before, the definite article. So since we're talking just prior to these texts, we're talking about resting on the 15th of Nisan, it is logical that it refers to HaShabbat as that's what we're talking about. We're talking about Passover and rest. And so then the day after the Shabbat, that Shabbat, the 15th of Nisan, this is the Pharisaic argument. Clearly they're saying then this day of rest is the festival Shabbat, not the weekly Shabbat. And when we read, and from the day on which you bring the sheaf of elevation offering, the day after the Sabbath, you shall count seven Shabbats, they must be complete. Contextually, from Leviticus 23 and the immediately previous discussion about resting, the day of waving the Omer and starting the count is assumed to be the day after the festival of Sabbath. Okay? I mean, of Passover. Because that's the context of the entire chapter, the festivals. Even the Shabbat in this chapter is called a Mikra Kodesh. It's the only place in the Tanakh. It's grouped in with the festivals. The whole thing's about the festivals. It's the only place. But the Bothusians and the Sadducees have one really, really good objection left up their sleeve. Actually, they have a lot of objections up their sleeves, but for simplicity's sake, well, probably too late for that. You with me at all? Okay, good. Let's wrap with this one. Let me share one of the biggest Sadducean objections to the Pharisees' choice of the 16th. I want you to look at these versions. First, we have one from the New American Standard Bible. It says, you shall also count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day when you brought in the sheaf of the wave offering, there shall be seven complete Sabbaths. Okay? You shall count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath. Then you shall present a new grain offering to the Lord. Now let's look at one, that same scripture from a Jewish translation. And from the day on which you bring the sheaf of the elevation offering, the day after the Sabbath, you shall count off 7 weeks. They must be complete. You must count until the day after the seventh week, 50 days. Then you shall bring an offering of the new grain. Do you see the difference? It's very easy. Shabbat, Sabbath, was replaced with a different word, weeks. Okay? Can they do that? Can you just arbitrarily change words? I mean, the word is Shabbatot when it says seven Sabbaths. Well, what if God did it first? Then could they do it? In the Torah, what if God did that first? Then could the Pharisees do that? Could they translate it that way? I think so. But here, in our translation, well, let's look at Leviticus 23:15-21, using the word weeks instead of Shabbats. As I said, the original Hebrew says Shabbatot, which is plural for Shabbat. So it really looks like we should be counting seven Sabbaths if we're reading it in the plain sense, right? But they put weeks in there. That changes a lot. It makes their case so easy. Can they just change it? Well, remember I told you Shabbat has a couple of meanings. Literally, it means to cease. We know it as the seventh day. We know it as the day of rest weekly. And now we know it as a festival Shabbat, a rest, right? All those things Shabbat can mean. Guess what else it can mean? A group of seven, like a week. Here's our biblical reference for that, also from the book of Leviticus. So keep this in mind. Leviticus 23, we're talking about all this mishigas that we're talking about here, this machloket. In Leviticus 25, here's something else we read about the Jubilee, the Yovel. You shall count off 7 weeks of years, 7 times 7 years, so that the period of 7 weeks of years gives you a total of 49 years. You see that? You with me on that? It says weeks. It translates it weeks. Do you know what word is used for weeks? Shabbatot. Okay? We're not talking about the Omer. We're talking about counting the groups of years, and they're called weeks of years. So we find that even later in Leviticus, V'sefarta lecha sheva shabbatot, 7 weeks of years. So it turns out that Shabbat can actually mean also a group of seven. So when they say 7 weeks, guess what? They have a biblical precedent for it because it is right there. Also about 7 times 7, it's 49 years. We're talking about 49 weeks. Let's not get too complicated, but there's an obvious connection that would allow you to say, after the festival Sabbath, you start counting 7 weeks, and 50 days later, where do you arrive? On Shavuot, no matter what day of the week it is. This is the case. It's a strong case. It's a strong case. I said that was going to be the last one. Let me do one more. Deuteronomy 16:9, which is also talking about the Omer, okay? After eating unleavened bread, this is 8, I think. After eating unleavened bread 6 days, you shall hold a solemn gathering for your God. On the 7th day, you shall do no work. And then it says this, you shall count off 7 weeks. Start to count the 7 weeks when the sickle is first put to the standing grain. What is that talking about in Deuteronomy 16? It's talking about the Omer. You have your Sabbath Passover rest, and then you start counting. How much do you count? 7 Sabbaths? It says 7 weeks, and it's Shavuot. It's weeks. So we're talking about the same thing here and using the term literally weeks to describe it. So again, we have strong, those smart and crafty scoundrels, those Pharisees. They read their Bible and they knew their Bible and made up traditions that were based on the Bible. Doggone it. But you know what? The Sadducees, their arguments are, they have good arguments too. So listen, here's the deal. Who was right? Who was right? Well, here's what we can be certain of. When Yeshua comes, we'll see which day he starts counting the Omer. And then we'll know who was right. Okay? But as far as Jewish tradition goes, we go with the Pharisaic interpretation. We don't even try to argue about it because it's really, you know, if you want to believe the other thing, I guess you can. But we're going to go with Judaism because Judaism's been doing this for a long, long time, and this is right. Count 49 days, 7 complete weeks. We celebrate Shavuot, not necessarily on Sunday, but on the 6th of Sivan, whatever day that may be. And the evidence is there, whether you understand anything I said or not, the evidence is there. But there's a deeper question that I once heard Rabbi Sachs of blessed memory ask, and it's relevant to our study. Why the hubbub? Honestly, why? Who cares? Why were the Sadducees so sold on Sunday? I mean, what difference does it make? You might be asking yourself that right now anyway. What difference does this make? Why was it important to be Sunday for the day the Sadducees and Pharisees? Why was it important for the day to be Sunday for the Sadducees and the Pharisees, something totally different? Well, here is one, and I'm coming to the end here, but I have to share this wonderful wisdom with you, also from the Talmud. This is in Minachot 65a. It says, disregarding the oral tradition, the Bothusians interpreted the phrase from the morrow after the day of rest. They interpreted that literally as referring to Shabbat, not the festival day. We just spent 30 minutes talking about that. At the time, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai joined the discussion with the Bothusians and said to them, "Fools, from where have you derived this?" And there was no man who answered him, except for one elderly man who was prattling at him. And he said, "Moses, our teacher, was a lover of the Jewish people, and he knew that Shavuot is only one day. Therefore, he arose and established it after Shabbat in order that the Jewish people would enjoy for themselves 2 days." Do you understand his point? Moses was the originator of the long weekend, he says. That's his argument. They were tired. It was harvest time. They were working in the fields and harvesting all this, and Shabbat came along, and it was only one measly day. So because Moses loved Israel so much, he declared that Shavuot would always fall on a Sunday, so they'd had Saturday and Sunday to rest. Take that, Yochanan ben Zakkai. And Yochanan's response was, "Fools." It's not a very good answer. It's cute, but I mean, honestly, there's got to be more than that, right? And there is. There is actually more than that. It's a beautiful, beautiful idea, and it is actually tied literally to the word Omer and to manna. The bread of freedom. Okay, there's much more. And on Thursday night, as we kick off the holiday of Shavuot, on Thursday night, with its two loaves of waving bread as an offering, I'll tell you the rest of the beautiful story. All right? Shabbat Shalom.